So I'm going to be introducing Diana Elser, who's a board member of the Cascadia Poetics Lab. The bio here from her book, which I think she's got copies of over here. Diana followed her twin granddaughters and climate preference to Southern California after 25 years in Seattle. She and her husband live in San Clemente, where she is writing more weather and climate poems. I'm sure she'll be reading some of those as well, and working on two new collaborations about aging and grandmothering, and another about ghouls. She volunteers at and highly recommends Beachtown Books, and is, as I mentioned, a board member of the Cascadia Poetics Lab. Please welcome Diana Elser.
So I'm going to read first from the book that Matt mentioned, and that's called The Winds of Home Have Names, and it was a tribute to my father, who's a meteorologist, which made for a lot of unusual, I knew cloud names and had met pilots and seen the teletype bring the weather information in when I was like 5 years old. So there was a lot of good material there. So the first poem is High Wind Warning. It was inspired by a 1982 Oakland Tribune newspaper clipping that was titled, They Call the Wind Cockeyed Bob, but had no author on it. So humans name the winds of home like they name their children, their pets. Familiar is the home horizon, color of the soil, taste of local water. Afghanistan's wind of 120 days, the Central American Chubasco, dry and hot Khamseen of the Middle East, Swahili over the Persian Gulf, Elephanta of southwestern India, Steppen Wind in Russia, North African Sirocco, Alaskan Taku, Siberia's Vayuga, North American High Plains Alberta Clipper, the Mistral of Provence, Waimea, Matsukaze, Willowa, Imba, Roque. I find the clipping 35 years after Dad's death, a wind sampler that triggers a brain-locked dust devil, makes me long to call or write. I would talk first about the Chinook, midwinter surprise when we lived in Montana. The mysterious name, sudden warmth, the melted snow cover, left us slogging home from school in mud, coats off, earth and vegetation smells spelling spring. I'd say his first grandchild, Jamie, the one he knew, lives on the Carquinez Straits, inland from San Francisco Bay toward the Delta, where the seasonal Diablo blows hot and dry, high pressure in Nevada pushing warm air over the Sierras. I'd mentioned Derek, whom he never met, the youngest grandson living in Seattle, where to the north the Squamish whirls up violent in the fjords, dissipates at sea, while to the south the gorge wind, the Coho, drives whitecaps on the Columbia. I'd tell him that in Southern California, sister wind to the Diablo, the Santa Ana, also born of Nevada heat, swells above the San Gabriels, rushes to the Pacific where his oldest grandson, Christopher, lives, born 3 months after he died, father to his twin great-granddaughters. But I'm done with this one-sided conversation. Cannot say any more names for small talk with a ghost, no matter how beloved. Nostalgia, the universal breeze of lost attachment, spins to wind shear, knocks me sideways. So these next two are different in tone from that one. And this is from the Grandma series that I'm working on. Driving across Nevada, Grandma proves she can do math. Not a gambler, I say to friends who suggest I try my luck at a Nevada casino, maybe take in a show, but I'm passing through to Wyoming, doing my best to stay awake on a highway engineered without turns across a monotone landscape in desert heat that softens the horizon, puts a glow on the road. Dangerous, the effects of boredom on a mind, loose with pickaxe in the memory mine, doing strange and stupid things to avoid sleeping at the wheel. Like trying to name, then horrified count the number of lovers one has had. The definition of lover meaning people with whom one did have sex. Note the comforting impersonal pronoun. One is tempted to revise in order to pretend, after all, there was nothing and no one so numerous they needed to be listed, for Christ's sake. I scramble for a pen to write down names, initials, because the paper scrap is small and the list needs columns. Relentless, the arc and swing of the pick, turning up one more nugget than another. One has to conclude, of course, doesn't one, that if the grand total, that is, doesn't matter because there's no one else in the car, the sum does not have to be revealed, ever, or even remembered. There were those who were refused, and one asks herself, why was that? Because the ones turned away now, nearly but not quite all, seem like a good idea. And this is, my last one is called A Bear Is Not Just a Bear. In Denver, a big blue bear, 5 stories high, stands upright, curved paws braced against the glass convention center wall, peering through reflections, looking for the new West he's heard about. I rise tall on my meager legs, sniff the wind like he does, seek some translation of past to present, myth to circumstance, looking to balance losses of family and land against what's left to discover. Setting myself against a bleak wind shaking the house, loosing memories into sky and space where storms boil up on a long horizon and there's room to feel small. It's what isn't here that counts. 2, I invite Bear for a drink, tell him I'm buying and we need to talk. As long as I don't have to sit on a stool, he answers. We get a corner booth and I get him drunk on honey and ginger martinis, tell him I want to hang out. Being drunk, he says, sure. And we ramble off, discussing what might make a good road trip theme song. He likes On the Road Again while I'm pushing for Take It Easy. We have a lot to do, I tell him, and he says, yep, I'm hungry again. I say that's not what I mean, but he says, we'll talk after dinner. 3, I tell him that wherever fence goes up to keep the buffalo where someone decides they have to stay, he and I will cut the wires, let them run. That I halfway wish they'd thunder over our bones. Speak for yourself, he grunts. Bear mainly wants to eat better and often. We're bringing back the wolf, too, I add. Bear says I'm crazy. He doesn't need that kind of competition. Says, the trouble with you is you don't sleep long enough in the winter. He thinks I ought to roll in the dust more often, learn to flip trout one-handed, help him pick berries, dig grubs, because he reminds me you and yours owe me. Then he catches me collecting inedibles again. Remnants, I explain, of shapes I'm sure I see hovering in blue mist over curling rivers. I confess to Bear I pray for our diminishment, my species, I mean. And Bear says, you need to talk less. I point out talking is the only thing saving his tribe from extinction. He huffs, swings his head side to side, lopes off. We didn't speak for a long time, but I know where to find him. Thanks.